How did you find your way here, you naughty children? Don't you know you shouldn't be snooping about in the dark? Well, since you're here, I suppose the crone will host you. Come closer. Closer. Curl up by the fire, and you'll hear a horror story from the Paperback Podcast.
The Witch Hunters by Lane McLeod Jackson. Episode 1. Mother always said, it does not pay to be ugly and stupid. It was her favorite expression, at least regarding me, and one thing you could say for our beloved mater is that she did not let familial affection cloud her judgment. To be honest, she was right. I was short, fat, with a perpetually weepy eye. As a toddler, I kind of resembled a pug. I had no choice but to be ugly, so I studied. But thankfully, I was not an only child. Those are Mother's words again. My brothers inherited none of my aesthetic limitations, though we had different fathers, to be fair. Bryce was tall, lean-muscled, and intense, long black hair and cruel features that eventually infected his soul. Dylan, in contrast, grew wide and pale, strong enough to be a circus act, flashing his pearl-white smile, spreading joy like the plague. Hate that I love them both. My sisters were not stupid, and they were certainly not ugly, except Quinn joined me during her awkward prepubescent years as a pariah. Wild curls, bulbous eyes, and the sharp underbite which infuriated the ants. Mother kept the faith, though, and was eventually proven correct. We were all gifted kids. And there comes a trap with that, hidden in potential. All of us. Dylan, Quinn, Bethany, Ingrid, Bryce, Laura. We all had it, which made us conceited. Because you see, bad luck will always triumph over what might have been. And any remains left are what we call tragedy. I'm the only one left in our merry band after they came through the park. Hardly the only victims, though we were the targets. Our learning wasn't anything compared to gunfire and cold iron. Mother was self-taught. Though hindsight and experience allow me to reflect with a little pride, you see, if her ex hadn't gotten mouthy and talked at the wrong bar in a few years, she would have been a force of nature. But that is part of the deal. She couldn't know the invisible world she courted, the enemies she'd volunteered to face. Still, when her skin hissed and bubbled as those men in ebony suits and ivory masks pulled away the pulsing, red-hot poker, she did not betray even the least of her children. Her frog prince hid, observing from our secret room, a walled-off closet with a hole just large enough to spy. I admit, this was a formative event, maybe even a tad traumatic. And Mother's victorious, gasping death crosses my mind as I watch Mrs. Cynthia Brandeis step out of her 2022 Honda CR-V. I try not to let my first impressions dominate the facts, but it's hard. Steel blonde hair cut short but layered, and athletic wear mixed with enough computers to launch an Apollo mission. But in addition to such cybernetic support, this costume is designed to highlight any gains. But why blame people for looking good, I chastise myself, watching through binoculars. Her expression is what my mother would have called haughty. I would too. Keen, judgmental eyes taking an unmowed lawn across the way. Lips pursed together. I must be tired because an old anger surges through, sparking a familiar urge to punish. It's hard for people standing on either side of the chasm we call fortune not to add a moral element. She might be terrible, but she's not terrible because she got lucky. Or if she is, I would be too. There, but for grace, go I. And she's off, bobbing her head to music that feels, oh, so rebellious. And I squeeze my watch and set the timer. 8 a.m. The daughter is already at school, her husband is driving to the office, and Cynthia steals this 20 minutes every morning. Not a long window. So I slide the van door open on the cable truck I've borrowed, clipboard in hand, and hat down, obscuring my face. Cynthia's mini-manor doesn't have any working cameras, but the neighbors might. This shouldn't be hard. She's the fourth person on my list. Probably will be as sweetly typical as anyone else. Okay, I often lie to myself, but thankfully I never believe me. The moment I open the unlocked door, I know this is the house. Been at this too long not to recognize the instinctive fear. My bladder wants to betray me, my throat dries, and every limb tells me to freeze. Instead, I step further inside. The smell immediately catches my attention. Incense! And despite the weather outside, I've begun to sweat. Too hot. Far too hot. So I reach into the brown uniform pockets and remove my silvered bracelet. The smooth metal in my hand cools, and the temperature in the foyer lowers a tad. The entity awaits my next play, unseen but certainly present. We're feeling each other out. Does Cynthia know what she's courted? Is this a guard? Somehow I doubt it. Somehow I think this poor mother, and she is that, whatever else she might be, just didn't think this through. Demovania. I don't have the material to banish this entity with what I've brought, and it doesn't have the power to stop my search. It knows. I know. So we're at détente. The closest thing to peace two predators may ever achieve. I avoid peering into reflective surfaces, nevertheless. The signs here of witchcraft are obvious, even to those not trained to see. The Brandeis house flaunts its new power, the faux children's paintings doubling as protection, the wicked cackling of spiritual servants beyond senses scamper about. Does Cynthia possess no instinct for survival? My anger returns. My mother at least understood at her core that these lessons came at a price. Things do not stay hidden for centuries because it is safe to be out in the open, and here the arrogance on display is galling. But, of course, I must remember she's never faced real danger. I cross into her room. Everything perfectly in place as if in a catalog. Including the shrine, displayed on her end table for all the world. Candles made of human fat, dried herbs mixed with blood, and gemstones shattered but collected in a simple bowl. I also see the spellbook, a simple little treatise, not even bound, but enough to damn the woman. She must have been reckless. I'm not saying that because of the magic. Stones and sins and all that, I've been doing this for years. But the demon who's infesting this place is drawn to suffering. I keep my distance from the shrine. The entity has no intention of giving up its meal, and this is its home. It surrounds me, waiting to see if I touch it. If I dare, the truce we've established will evaporate. Now, it probably can't kill me, but I'd certainly lose my 20 minutes. Instead, I continue my search. Her daughter's room contains a similar shrine, though I note that the 17-year-old has some talent. A small wax poppet stares at me with almost human eyes. The younger Brandeis had the sense to leave a trap, albeit a small one. Creative. The fiend's presence is also weaker here, held at bay. The girl has an instinct for self-preservation her mother lacks. I wonder what happened. Finally, the home office tells me what I need. It's a multi-purpose document. I turn one page to find the names of all the members. Another reveals Cynthia's private thoughts about this wondrous new hobby. And there are various recipes. Her word for spells. It's all in one place. I always keep a moleskin notebook on me, and I quickly copy down the names and numbers I find. My watch vibrates on my wrist as I leave. Moving towards the van, I try to find comfort in the knowledge that I'm too late. What is going to happen is not my fault. Cynthia Brandeis is already dead. Hey, kid, I'm gonna borrow your phone. He hands it over without a thought and stands next to me. Big guy, probably gonna end up over 6 feet. He stares off into the distance with an uninhibited grin, and I'm reminded of Dylan. Gotta cut out this sentimentality. The phone rings 3 times before the click. We both let the silence live for a moment.
Well?
She invites. Number four. I respond. Not alone. Found additional name.
And?
She pushes. Terminal for primary, I answer. I don't know for the others. The weight burns, because I know who's on the other side. She's always wrestled with her nature. She very much would like to be kind.
The only thing that matters,
the voice commands,
is it does not bring us attention.
Understood. She hangs up. This was not a long phone call, but better safe than sorry. Hey, kid. He looks at me, his eyes watering since he's not blinked in over 2 minutes. Thanks. We never met, and sorry you broke your phone. I don't drive off until I see him take the handheld computer, look at it with this vague air, then drop it onto the cement and bring his foot down on the screen. He does it again and again and again, shattering the several hundred dollar device. Hey, kids these days! I memorized the copied list of names before burning the piece of paper outside of a Wendy's parking lot. The van has been returned, refilled, and the mileage altered. As far as the evidence is concerned, that hunk of metal never drove out past Cypress Road. My orders were clear. Do not interfere. Let nature take its course. While it's sad these folks invited doom, it is not coven business. Still, I wanted to take a peek at the other members. Maybe death could be avoided. A harsh lecture has worked for others. If Cynthia alone disappeared, the others might be spared. Google is a frightful thing. The amount of information floating, waiting to be scooped up, would make Orwell turn in his grave. The fact we enthusiastically volunteer the material probably makes it better, but I don't know. It only takes me an hour to have the addresses, political affiliations, pictures, and a couple of social security numbers. Welcome to the 21st century. Our friend Cynthia has burned every shred of doubtful beneficence I'd bestowed. This isn't a book club. It's grooming. Fellow soccer moms, I'd understand. Experimental neighbors, even a few lovers, but no. These are all children. Her daughter's friend group. The youngest is 13, and I know what kind of person uses power to gather the innocent about them, who offers the secrets of adulthood in return for love, affection, and eventually, obedience. I've met them. It's never good. My oldest sibling had just turned 18 when they came. We were also children. The binder mentioned a meeting tonight. It would not be hard to track the group. My nearest safe house was only a few miles away. I could fetch a few necessities, return, follow Cynthia, and do what could be done, which may be nothing. Well, not in fairness, that's not entirely true. I could always get myself killed. The red brick exterior is very comforting. Everything I had as a child seemed to be temporary, and brick? That's made to last. Just ask the third little pig or his wolf supper. A realtor owns this prime location at the moment. She's a delightful woman, big, brassy, living the dream. I got a slight crush, but no better than to pursue anyone who lives this close to my secrets. A shame. The alley behind cradles a small cellar door. I've willed it away from reality. I'm not all-powerful, but I am very good. It is highly unlikely that it has been discovered. Still, always take precautions. We pass once without stopping, observe for any discrepancies. Then I send a volunteer who will not remember the encounter to open and close the door. Once they return alive, I go. Carefully. But I go. And so it is done. Locking the cellar behind me and ducking into the crawl space, I feel in the darkness for my things. My hands wrap around the ivory handle of my dagger first, the curved blade designed to plunge into an exposed neck. Useful for sacrifices. Not that anyone does that kind of thing anymore. Here, at least. Next is the rod. A smoothly polished piece of yew topped with a carved serpent's maw. I love this thing. Once found, I continue, and a click sounds as I open the jewelry box. In my mind's eye, They glisten. I gently steal the ruby 3 spaces up and 2 on the left. It slips onto my finger without struggle. The cloaks all hang to my left, and I grip the last one. Blood crimson. The mask hangs alongside the fabric, a vicious, toothy monstrosity carved from oak. And finally, for good measure, I take the 9mm and the holster from their drawer. How we witches travel depends largely on the individual. Cliché or not, many do still use broomsticks. I once met an old-fashioned lady with an enormous bat who carried her from place to place, but these methods require additional tricks to remain unseen. They can be intercepted. Still, I cannot deny they are much more pleasant than my system. Apparently, there are some folks who enjoy being suffocated. Weighted blankets, snuggies, and even hands wrapped around the throat during, well, you know. I am not included in this category. I hate tight spaces. So as the air leaves my body and I fall gasping behind the mask, shaking as my lungs beg for mercy, this offers no thrill, and even the most ardent admirer of autoasphyxiation would not enjoy this crushing pressure, the splintering of bones, the burning of flesh as I am grounded into nothingness. Color is torn from my sight, and I'm left but a shadow. But such half-things travel very quickly through their subworld, leaping through pools of darkness in any city. Anywhere light cannot be found, I can. Hurling as a half-person from building to car to rat to... Here, I take the moment to swim about and make sure the place is abandoned. Satisfied, I return to a world of light, sound, sensation, delight... and life. The sweet return of breath does not make the journey worthwhile, but it is a pleasant change. The most dangerous point is now, between this dark corner and the inside of that house. After all, I am dressed in blood red, wielding a dagger, wand, and gun. Even I wouldn't object to someone shooting me on sight. I can see the group through the window. The blinds aren't even down. A circle of moronic teenagers hold candles above their heads, allowing the wax to drip. And while I cannot hear the chanting, their moving, blistered lips tell me the story. This is all wrong. Even the most powerful spells in Cynthia's books were not nearly this complex. Then she enters, holding some new, massive tome. I can see her struggling with the weight. Where did she get it? A question which will need to be answered. But I know this ritual. And I'm almost out of time. The first girl screams as the wax on her head ignites. She panics, but only has time to realize she cannot actually move before the inferno melts the skin from her bones. Her skeleton continues to stand, though, chanting. No time to waste. 3 of the 9 are dead as I burst through the kitchen door. Another 4 are gone as I enter the living room. Mine! Cynthia screams, eyes bleeding over her smile. All mine! I pull the trigger as another child goes up in flames. Her daughter. Without thinking, I toss my cloak over the girl, trying to put out the fire. It works, but she's whimpering. The spell now broken. Only one stands unburned, and she screams. I aim the weapon, and the noise stops. If you want to survive, you need to listen to everything I say. Otherwise, I'll vanish and guarantee you will not last the night. Their shocked nod will have to do. Okay, stay here and hold this cloak over your friend. It'll soothe the burns, at least a little. I'm going to the garage. I'll be right back. They pick up the enormous leather book from Cynthia's dead hands, her fingers still clutching tight, but I break them without thought. The whispers begin as soon as it touches skin. Wicked, evil urges. I should have some sympathy for the dead woman. With this, she never stood a chance. But honestly, I never liked her. In the burbs, people often use the garage as extra storage, knowing full well the entirety of a world-spanning civilization is at their beck and call. Why bother with tools? That's what money is for. Fortunately, whoever lived here had a handy streak. A partially dissected Chevy takes up most of the space, and there, in the corner, my dreams are answered. We have several large canisters of gasoline. So I begin, carefully but quickly drenching everything I find. Making my way back into the living room, I see the two huddled together, relief and terror in unequal measure painting their expressions. "What's your name?" I ask the uninjured one. "Monica," she responds. "And that's Carol, right?" I say, nodding towards the huddled mass in her arms. She nods, realizes maybe she shouldn't, and holds her friend tighter. "Not too hard," I caution, now soaking the furniture. She's very hurt. "Who are you?" she manages. "I'll tell you, but first we've got to get out. Listen, Monica, all of this, what you were all doing, what she did, that's going to bring some attention. And the people coming are very, very scary. The best option for you, I mean, is if I make this all seem like an accident that killed everyone. Once we're safe, I will explain, I promise." "My parents," she began. "Monica, let me be clear. Anyone you talk to from this moment out will probably be killed if you don't do exactly what I say. Got it?" I expected more. Screaming denial. I thought I might have to aim the gun again. But no. She held her friend and determination settled into her brow. It's not hard to make a homemade fuse. The problem is reliability. But still, even in a rush, I was pretty confident. Turning on the gas burner, I made sure it caught. It would spread to a puddle of gas in a minute, tops. "Okay. Monica, lead me to a back road. We'll need a car." "I have one." "No. People have to think you were here." She leads the way and I hear the first explosion when we're about a block further. I'm praying that people don't see me, which is frankly the same thing as praying for a miracle. "What the hell?" cried the understandably frightened young man who stopped to help Monica. He did not expect to see a masked freak step out of the shadows. "You were robbed," I explained to him. "Two men in a ski mask. It was traumatic. You remember nothing particular. Leave the key in the car. Run that way." He darts deeper into the little scruff of trees that passes woods in this place. I indicate the wheel to Monica. "You drive. I'm going to do what I can for Carol. Don't use your phone. Drive towards 33rd. Do not stop for anyone you know." She doesn't argue, and I pull away the cloak. If I had had time, I would have smiled. The blisters crawling up Carol's side probably weren't fatal, and with a little help, not even disfiguring. "This is going to seem a little weird, Carol," I apologize before reaching into my pouch. The egg catches her eye, and she shakes her head, unsure of the unreality. "No thanks. Not hungry." At that point, I do smile, before cracking the shell. Silver droplets stain her skin and begin to spread along the burn. "It'll do for now. Take a right here onto the freeway, Monica. We're going to want to switch vehicles soon." I remove the mask and try my best to offer reassurance. Monica instinctively flinches. "It's all right. I don't take it personally. She's had a hard day." "Welcome. I've got a couch and an air mattress. You get to pick. I'm going to keep Carol in the armchair, though. The woman in question is asleep in my arms, and the concoction I used has worked better than even I'd hoped. With some careful tending and a little luck, physically, there may be no marks. Physically." "Who are you?" Monica begins to shout. And she's got a point. I did promise to answer questions when we were out of immediate danger. Good for her. "People call me Mortimer," I answer, laying Carol down, curled up in my cloak. "No, it's not my name. I will never tell you my real name. And I would spend tonight coming up with a new one for yourself. Two, actually." She begins, but I wave my hand. "I'm going to talk first. No offense, but you don't know enough to ask important questions. Once I'm done, I'll let you quiz me." As I speak, I pull out a small tray of cookies. It's all I've got. They're pre-made, and while she's probably in too much shock to eat, she might nibble at a snack place down. I pop one in my own mouth to set a good example. "Okay, so at some point last year, Miss Brandeis got hold of a very powerful and frankly dangerous book." I indicate the bag right stuff the monster. "It's magic. You already know that, right?" "Yeah," Monica mutters. Exciting, right? And she decided to share this with you, Carol, and the rest of your friends. But this particular thing brings out the worst in people. It festers. So as she studied, she became less and less human. The person who did that to your friends, to you, that wasn't the Miss Brandeis you knew, okay? She didn't believe me. It was plain on her face, and to be honest, I was bending the truth. Wickedness comes in all forms. Cynthia's brutality must have been inside all along. So, seemingly unrelated, I have a friend who works at Animal Rescue. What? Monica said. Not in a shelter. I'm protecting their identity, you understand. But let's say it came to my and others' attentions that animals were being killed. More importantly, their organs were being harvested. You know what I'm talking about, right, Monica? She didn't nod or shake her head, but instead simply paled. So, for those of us who have been dealing with these issues for a while, that's what we call a portent. A sign that those who use magic might be about. But more specifically, we knew someone was either new or on the run because they didn't know how or couldn't hide the rituals particularly well. But we took the animals from all over, Monica protested. Sure, and that might have bought you a few weeks. But once we had an idea something was amiss, it did not take me long to find out which neighborhood it all started. And then I found Miss Brandeis. Now, we expected something far less developed than I found. So, why can't I go home? Monica asked slowly. She's dead, right? Well, Monica, a couple of reasons. The first is when I visited the Brandeis home today, I found a demon. Young, but certainly old enough to kill you, Carol, and the rest of your family. You see, that thing is going to be furious about Miss Brandeis' death, and it's going to claim anyone she ever touched. Two, by saving you, I have created two witnesses who have not proven they can be silent, which makes the other witches. So you are a witch. She breaks off a piece of cookie and swallows it. Good. She needs something in her stomach. Yes, yes I am. And other witches will come for the books, the secrets, and to keep you quiet. Because of the third problem. This could, and probably will, attract the attention of those who hunt us. And they purge, Monica. They'll come for friends, families, anyone they even think might have touched those spells. Our best bet, from a self-preservation point of view, was to let everyone die tonight, so that when they investigated, it would seem like an isolated incident. Let us die? And correct me if you disagree, but I kind of thought that would be a little evil. The laugh caught her and me off guard. So what now? Monica's trust seemed like a precious honor that I was not worthy of. Well, in a few minutes, some folks are going to come through that door, and they are going to be very upset with me. But I've been a good boy mostly, and I think they'll get over it. Best case scenario, you two start a new life with us. What's the worst case? Well, it's still less painful than burning to death. But you get some sleep. It'll be okay. I can't go to... She stumbles, looking at the half-eaten cookie in her hand, and back to me. I shrug. Immune, I explain. I made sure when I baked them. You... But she slowly moves towards the couch. Jerk face. She's asleep. Just in time, too. The doors fly open, and my friends arrive, all holding daggers. What have you done? Andromeda's fury comes out as a whisper. I said no attention. What do you call burning down a house? You're supposed to protect us. Us. It's a fair point. But I'm thinking about a different woman. A fat redneck in a trailer. Despite being tortured, simply refused to let a child be killed. And whatever else, I am my mother's son.
Hiya, I'm LJ Longo.
And I'm Lane McLeod Jackson.
Honey.
And I'm Lane McLeod Jackson.
Tales from the chaotic musings of your hosts, two love-struck creatives, Paperback Podcast unveils bi-monthly stories from an eclectic array of genres.
Here, we come out of our shells in the odd weeks of each month, hopefully to your delight and probably God's scorn.
Welcome, and enjoy.